What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the PFN Scouting Podcast. I'm Ian Cummings, joined as always by my good friend, co-host Derek Tate, NFL Draft Fantasy Analyst for PFN. The NFL Draft is far in the rearview mirror. Now we were building up so much, and now it's past, and it's kind of just done, right? So what do we do now with our time? That's the predicament that I've had the past couple weeks, Derek. I don't know about you, but it's been a little bit tougher to occupy myself, right? You know, we're getting into 2025 a little bit, but it's a lot slower after the NFL Draft. It's kind of like a hangover, right? So we've been getting into a little bit of 2025 stuff. I know you've been writing about landing spots and dynasty for the fantasy side, but first off, I got to check in, man. How you doing? A couple weeks out now, we're gearing up for 2025, but still kind of in that lull afterward.
Yeah, I was gonna say you can speak for yourself a little bit when it comes to not being quite as busy decompressing. For me I'm doing a lot of dynasty fantasy football drafts right now for all their incoming rookies, which means I've been, you know, flooded not only on top of, you know, all the analysis that I'm doing for all these new landing spots for, you know, from a fantasy perspective heading into their rookie season, but I'm also participating in those drafts. So I'm going my own GM version, trading rookie picks, trading back, and I've found a lot of value. Obviously, we talked about the depth of this wide receiver class and a lot of these offensive position players falling into good spots, which I kind of expect some of them to produce immediately. And I know we're going to do a deep dive into that. But yeah, I'm really excited about this one. I'm still pretty busy. I can understand how we need a little bit of time to decompress, though.
Yeah, for sure. And it's one of those. It's kind of fun at this point now. Like, it is different in the lead up to the draft. It's so much speculation, right? It's like, oh, this could happen. But you know, the more you think about it, this could happen. And oh, what about this? You haven't even considered this, right? So, you know, it's all about discussing the different outcomes and team player fits and things like that, how the board might play out. Now it's kind of fun because we're behind the draft now and we can just talk ball. That's pretty much all it is, right? So, you know, there is a certainty to it that I do appreciate. And with that certainty, though, we can keep talking about that uncertainty as well with the outcomes and the rookie seasons for some of these, 2024 NFL draft picks. So today's episode, and we'll get to open it up a bit. It's going to be a fun one. But we're focusing on the offensive side of the ball. And of course, if you all missed our full recap of the 2024 NFL draft, you can go back to last week, check that out. Next week I will be off on vacation, so there will be no new pod next week, but we will pick it back up the week after and we'll be going through the offseason. So today's podcast episode, offensive playmakers, landing spots. What are the best ones? What are the most questionable ones? What do we like? What do we not like? Right? So we're going to get into all of that, starting as always, Derek, with the quarterback position. I know it's cliche a lot, you know, starting with QB because they do draw the most attention, but the QB and how they perform dictates the performance of a lot of other pieces on the offense too. So it's one of those things where it precipitates off of that. So it feels right to start with the rookie QB class, and especially after six QBs went in the top 12, right? Caleb Williams to the Bears, you got Jaden Daniels to the Commanders, Drake May to the Patriots. And then you got Penix to the Falcons, who probably won't be a factor in his rookie year, ideally, if things go according to plan with Kirk Cousins. But then you've got J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings, who's probably going to play pretty early, and Bo Nix to the Broncos, who doesn't have a ton of competition in that room. So six QBs, varying opinions on landing spots. I know some are a little less certain, but off the top of your head, you've got a chance to watch these guys on tape, and we have an idea of the situation, the supporting cast, to which supporting structure stands out to you as the one that will make that rookie most primed to produce early on. For me, it's a pretty easy answer. Looking at what I guess there's two that stand out to me. I would say the Bears and the Vikings, both in the NFC North, right? Caleb Williams, mm-hmm. with the support that he has, you got Keenan Allen, you got DJ Moore, you got Roma Dunze, you've got a pretty strong offensive line, and you've got a defense. I think this is the important part too. You've got a defense, and this is more for, you know, just winning football games as opposed to fantasy football, right? Because if he had a terrible defense and he had to put up 50 points a game like he did at USC, then fantasy managers would be pretty ecstatic about that, right? You know, that would rack up the points. But at Chicago, right, if the Bears are looking to compete right away, they have a defense that won't put as much pressure on Caleb Williams too, because they have pretty good talent on the front seven. The linebacking core is very good. They could have added more edge talent, but getting Austin Booker in I think round five was a really good value. Mm-hmm. I think Montez Sweat is a great player, and their secondary is probably one of the best in the league if they can play up to their potential. So they got the defense to take pressure off. They have this full offensive supporting structure. But then the Vikings too, with J.J. McCarthy. Justin Jefferson is a QB's best friend. Jordan Addison is a rising star. You got a really strong offensive line too. TJ Hockenson is a good safety blanket. To me, those are the two that stand out. I would say, you know, those are the pretty solid QB landing spots. The Commanders, probably a close second to those in the next tier down. But which landing spot stands out to you as the most QB friendly?
We talk about the top quarterback prospects every single season ad nauseum, right? Yep. So last year we saw Bryce Young go number one overall. We recently have seen Trevor Lawrence, and even going back to like Baker Mayfield going number one overall at the quarterback position. And the situations they stepped into were far from ideal, right? The supporting infrastructure, the talent on the outside, even some in some cases, the offensive line unit is very, very questionable, in particular for Bryce Young last year, too. He had receivers that couldn't separate and all kinds of offensive line issues, mm-hmm. which you saw a talented prospect like Bryce Young, who was I had him as my top quarterback heading into last season. It was right there with, you know, CJ Stroud was nipping at his heels on my board. But, you know, I don't think that Bryce Young is a terrible quarterback, but his production looked very, very suspect because he was playing in a terrible situation. And I say all that to say this, I can't remember any situation in recent memory, certainly since the turn of the century, where a number one overall pick at quarterback has walked into a more favorable situation than what you have with Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears. You mentioned the defensive infrastructure, and I thought that last year Eberflus really got that defensive unit playing quite nicely, kind of gelling and hitting their stride over the final month of the season. And like you said, Montez Sweat. I also like some of the quiet signings that they made. They already have Jaquan Brisker at safety, and you go and get Kevin Byard, a very accomplished veteran presence in that secondary to join what Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, and Tyreek Stevenson. It's a good defensive unit that seems to be pointing in the right direction, and we didn't even talk about their linebackers. Mm-hmm. But the Bears on the offensive side of the ball, it's unfortunate that Justin Fields has to change teams right when this team is absolutely loaded up with a bevy of talent. I mean, you got two alpha wide receivers that have already proven to have top production and very reliable options and can be feature players in your offense in DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. And then you add Romo Dunze, who you can make an argument he's the most talented prospect of all of these guys, stepping in as your number three option at wide receiver, and Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett. A lot of things to really like. DeAndre Swift coming out of the backfield. I think it's a chalk answer, but it's the right answer. It's Caleb Williams stepping into the best situation in 2024. And I think he has a legitimate chance to throw for somewhere around 4,000 yards and 25 touchdowns in his rookie year. That's the type of situation that he has with all that talent around him. It's just going to see how Shane Waldron, the new offensive coordinator, gets all of these pieces to gel in 2024.
Yeah, and the cool thing about Romo Dunze too is that, you know, he's polished enough where he'll be a factor right away, probably, or at least pretty early on. I think, you know, Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, they take the weight off of him where he doesn't have to be that guy right away. Like Marvin Harrison Jr. in Arizona, it's different, right? Because and to be honest, like, you know, I was very high on him, so I don't expect the pressure to be too much of an issue for him. But there is something to be said about other presences in the receiving core taking the load off, dictating attention from the defense, right? So that's probably the main element that's at play here. But, you know, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Romo Dunze, that's putting the defense in a three-headed tug of war that they don't want to get into, right? On every single down. And then you got Caleb Williams, who's the consummate playmaker at the QB position. It's a perfect fit. And I think it's unique too, because you mentioned it's very rare for first overall picks to walk into this kind of situation. And this situation is different because Chicago didn't even have the rights to that first overall pick, you know, at first. They got it via trade from Carolina. So maybe there's a lesson there, broad scale. Like if you have a QB prospect that you're not in love with and another team is willing to spend maybe a little too much, be patient, wait another year, get some capital, you know. And there's other, you know, more broad scale philosophical questions that, you know, discussions to have about that, right? Because obviously, you know, if you have a QB prospect that you really like, it's tough to pass up that QB in the immediate timeline because you don't know if you're going to get another one later on, right? So,
I mean, the conversation even with like Ryan Poles last year, I mean, if you were going to take quarterback and you were going to move off of Fields and you want to reset the financial market to build around a rookie quarterback, I mean, you can make an argument that they missed on CJ Stroud because CJ Stroud looks like a dude in it after his, you know, historic rookie season. So I understand there's like a lot of philosophical, like GM, you know, strategy approaches that can be taken, you know, with how the Bears had this haul play out over the last 2 years.
Yeah. And it's fun to think about it, man, because like, the tough part is it would be great if we could look ahead 3 to 5 years and see like, oh, the 2026 class is going to have 3 first-round talents, right? The 2027 class is going to have 6 first-round talents, but we don't know. We never know. So, you know, you're playing with that uncertainty. That's what makes it fun. But the Bears looking very smart for the way they played it, you know, getting that first overall pick, getting Caleb Williams. And yeah, it's tough to see Justin Fields moving on right as the Bears get a legitimately potentially elite wide receiver trio. I mean, that looking at that trio juxtaposed with others in the league, like I'm trying to pick out which ones I would rather take. The Texans, maybe with Nico Collins, Tank Dell, and Stephon Diggs, but Diggs is getting older and he trailed off a little bit late last year. So I don't know, man. The Bears have 3 guys that are still in their prime and two really young guys who are explosive, fluid, versatile. Like, that is the perfect situation for a rookie QB to walk into. And
The Seattle Seahawks also come to mind, yeah, with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Jackson Smith and Jigba. But really, they're on the short list. If we're talking about 3 true receivers and 11 personnel, the Bears are right there in the top 5 for a collection of 3 top talents at that position.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say the Bears, the Texans definitely are up there, and I'm blanking on a few others, but the Raiders are a fun one because we've talked about Brock Bowers, ooh, and his classification, right?
Yeah.
Just a little pivot here, but like Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, that's a really good one too. And then if you view Brock Bowers as your big slot weapon, right, then that could be your trio right there. Adams, Myers, and Bowers, and that's pretty scary too. So that's a fun one, but I gotta rack my brain for the rest of them too. And the 49ers are a caveat with Debo and Ayuk and Pearsall, because one of those first 2 guys might be on the move soon. We don't know, but there's been speculation about that, so it's tough to, you know, get a full read on it because some pieces are still settling. But so the bottom line is the Bears are near the top there. They're one of the better ones too. The Vikings are good supporting cast for McCarthy, right? Any red flags there that you see? The one that I would maybe bring up is slot receiver, right? We know Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison are a very good 1-2 punch. But to my knowledge, and KJ Osborne was never a game-breaking threat. Like, he was a good utility guy in the slot, but, you know, kind of just a league-average starter, probably, right? But I don't think they got enough. I'm not sure they got enough back, right? They have TJ Hockenson, so that kind of takes the load off a little bit. But the receiving core is good enough. The offensive line is very good, too. How you feeling about the Vikings and JJ McCarthy? And they also have Sam Darnold, so he doesn't have to start right away. You know, that's the other appeal, is that you can ease him in if you need to.
Yeah, no, I love the fit with, in particular with Kevin O'Connell. Yeah. I mean, it felt like Kevin O'Connell was able to make it work with whether it was Josh Dobbs or Jaren Hall or I'm blanking on the last, you know, rotational quarterback that they had in there.
Mullins,
I think it was Nick Mullins.
Yeah,
I think it was Nick Mullins. And it seemed like the Vikings got some production out of those backup quarterbacks. Of course, it didn't go, you know, ideally, because you had Justin Jefferson in and out of the lineup. He was dealing with a hamstring injury for the majority of last season. But yeah, on paper, and including the how JJ McCarthy even played football at Michigan, like, he feels comfortable under center. He feels comfortable coming off play action, and the Minnesota Vikings run play action more than any other team in the NFL. So I believe you have, you know, I believe you got an upgrade too from Alexander Mattison to Aaron Jones. I think Aaron Jones was kind of prematurely written off. I know he had an injury-riddled 2023 campaign, but I think you're going to be able to run the football behind that offensive line. I still really like Garrett Bradbury and Christian Darrisaw up front for the Minnesota Vikings. And while I don't think that they're going to use McCarthy in the QB design run game as much as Jim Harbaugh did during his days at Michigan, because that's just not what we see a lot of at quarterback, but it's certainly in his bag occasionally. So I believe with the experience in a pro, like with pro style concept off play action that he had at Michigan, I actually feel like it's going to be a pretty seamless transition, and has a quarterback friendly coach who can, I believe, put his quarterback in a situation to succeed early on while he kind of adjusts and recalibrates to the NFL game.
Yeah, I think especially for rookie QBs, the name of the game is putting them in a system where they're comfortable, you know, giving them easy solutions when they need them, but also playing to their strengths, right? So McCarthy, what are the strengths? Obviously, you know, obviously he's athletic. He can throw off platform, right? So play action, boot action, rollouts, you know, I think play action has always been a staple of O'Connell's game, right? Kirk Cousins was always at his best under PA, right? McCarthy really thrives in that phase when he has that answer available to him and he can get on the move and use the arm elasticity, right? But then also he does show flashes of anticipation over the middle of the field, and he's not afraid to test tight windows, right? You want the field vision to be a little more consistent, less hot and cold, but it's there. You know, the chops are there. So I think it's one of those things where O'Connell is the exact kind of offensive mind who can scheme those easy solutions for a QB like McCarthy, who's still struggling to pick out solutions on his own, right? So that's the biggest thing. So it's going to be a fun fit. I think they have everything they need to incubate his talent and eventually start sustaining growth. A little bit more on the QBs, and then we'll transition to wide receiver, because as we know, every year it seems like we have a lot of ground to cover, even with just the day two guys. So we'll try and cover as much as we can. But QBs that, you know, I feel like most of the remaining fits you can put into buckets where, like, there is talent there, but there's also uncertainty. I think the Commanders are starting to inch a little bit closer to that tier where it's like, all right, we feel good about this, right? You know, I think they made some good moves on the offensive line. They got Tyler Biadasz at center. They did get Brandon Coleman, who they're going to play at left tackle, probably with Andrew Wiley at right tackle. Jaden Daniels, I think, falls into a pretty good system fit where he's got Terry McLaurin, who can be that vertical threat, but also that consistent converter. Jahan Dotson is kind of a wild card right now, but he's a solid rotational guy, I think. I think if you can get him in space a little bit, let him use that twitch, he can work. And then he's got, you know, we remember one of the best traits of his coming out of college was his hands, spider-like hands, right? So I think Jaden Daniels plays well into that as well. And then you've got Ben Sinnott, a tight end, who was my tight end too, top 50 guy for me, man. I love that fit as a safety blanket who can play H-back, in line, big slot, wherever you need him to. He can run routes. He can separate over the middle. He's got that fluidity and that seamless separation integration that Sam Laporta had last year. So I really like the fit there. I think he can be a phenomenal player for them. The Patriots with Drake May, that was one of the less certain ones leading into the draft. They got two receivers who I think really fit his style. Jalen Polk from Washington, who I'm on record probably about 50 times just gushing over on the podcast. They got Javon Baker from UCF, who I think is a really good player too. He's got room to refine his consistency, like we've talked about. But you know, when he's on his game, he can attack the ball, he can snare it from the air, and he's got pretty good twitch and route running ability too. And they added a little bit to the offensive line, Caden Wallace in round three. I think that was a bit of a reach for him. So I'm still, the book is still out on how that line settles for me. But I do think they added some talent. I think he at least has enough to stay afloat, and you got Jacoby Brissett, so he doesn't have to start right away. Bo Nix in Denver is an interesting one too. The receiving core, some injuries, some medical stuff with some of those guys. Cortland Sutton is still there for the time being. They got Marvin Mims, who I think flashed a little bit in limited action, so he's a vertical threat. Intrigued to see what he can do. They got Troy Franklin in round four, so chemistry with Bo Nix, which is very good. The offensive line is okay, right? You know, not a ton of long-term security there. That's the thing that concerns me. But
yeah, Bowles and McGlinchey kind of make me I'm on the fence about.
Yeah, McGlinchey kind of has that feel where he was grandfathered in as like, all right, well, we know he's a starter, but he didn't really play up to the reputation that his contract would assume, you know, as a free agent coming from San Francisco, right? And I think for the Broncos, regressions happen. I think on the offensive line, especially after big contracts, they happen pretty often. So that's something that I'm a little anxious about with Denver, right? You know, you have a lot of offensive linemen who, yeah, have played solid in times of the past, right? But not a ton of long-term security, and even security from a week-to-week perspective, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm a little trepidatious about that. But I know Bo Nix can do, if he can do one thing, it's get the ball out quick, it's get it out accurately, right? It's distribute. So I'm not overly concerned about that. I think there's enough. And then, of course, Penix probably will be sitting at least for the next couple of years if Kirk Cousins can stay healthy. So, you know, a lot of QB thoughts. Any closing thoughts in the QB group and the landing spots for you, Derek, before we move on to wide receiver?
No, I'm definitely very intrigued by Jaden Daniels and everything that Adam Peters has done to kind of, you know, plug holes in that roster, add talent. I think, you know, underrated signings like Zach Ertz and Austin Eckler should help, you know, a veteran presence in the passing game, at particular Eckler out of the backfield, should help a rookie quarterback early on while you figure out exactly how you want to deploy Sinnott or Luke McCaffrey or some of the other pieces and kind of makeshift and put those pieces in the right places while Cliff Kingsbury is trying to figure out exactly how to game plan and scheme up the offensive playmakers around Jaden Daniels, who is obviously very dynamic as a dual threat option.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see all the pieces settle, because I agree. I think they have a lot of the necessary pieces. I think Luke McCaffrey actually fits. I know a lot of people thought it was a reach at the tail end of round three, but I do think there's a scenario where he gives you exactly what you still need, right? You got Terry and Jahan Dotson, who can maybe stress the defense vertically a little more. You got Luke McCaffrey, who I think can be that really solid utility option in the short range with his versatility, his fluidity. He's a former QB, so again, he knows how to find those soft spots in zone and make himself available. Mm-hmm. He's got good fluidity for his size. He's got the size to box guys out at the catch point too. So really solid player who I think is pretty well-rounded across the board. So every team, if I'm the GM anyway, you know, I would always want this is a good transition to wide receiver, right? Because we're talking about receivers and team fits and, you know, how they play off each other. Derek, if I was a GM, you know, I know every team's type of wide receiver is different, but I would think of it like a basketball roster, right? Like, I think you need complementary skill sets. I think that's always what you need. So I would always be looking for, you know, if I could build the dream receiving core, right? I would have that vertical threat, you know, who's got the size and speed to stress defenses on that plane, but can also separate a little bit, right? I would want that underneath guy, that rack utility guy, right? Who can get scheme touches, that alignment versatility where you can get motions to key in on the coverage look, but then also have him isolate one-on-one matchups and win off of that. And then I would probably want a separator, right? Someone who I know can win one-on-one if I need him to, right? Obviously you want a degree of route running with all those other guys, but I want someone who specializes in that. I want someone who knows how to win against any kind of coverage, has the bend, the flexibility, but also the nuance, the efficient motion to stay on rhythm and make catches, you know, convert at the catch point, right? So, you know, I think that's the dream receiving core for me. And looking at, you know, all of these pieces and who got picked in the 2024 NFL draft, a lot of new exciting trios were formed. And so it's going to be fun to kind of explore it. You know, we talked about Rome Odunze with the Bears. We talked about, you know, a few other guys, Brian Thomas Jr. to the Jaguars, going with Christian Kirk, and they got Gabe Davis in free agency. The Bengals are an intriguing one, man. Jamar Chase, T. Higgins still under contract for this year. And they got Jermaine Burton as well. You know, we'll talk about that in a bit, but I think the upside is phenomenal there. The Buccaneers with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Jalen McMillan. Come on, man. I mean, so many unique trios in the NFL that have been newly formed. So looking at the receiver position, Derek, I guess I'll ask you too, because this is just something I'm curious about. What's your dream receiving core, if you could put it together? And what do you think about the new cores that were formed in the 2024 NFL draft?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm trying to remove my fantasy lens from this, and I'm just trying to, like, pure football fit, right? And you really feel like you completed what you needed to make the exact type of dream team, so to say, in your receiver room. I thought the Indianapolis Colts, by getting Adonai Mitchell, was a home run because he can separate, he can play outside, he's got the vertical speed, which this offense, while Josh Downs is a nice athlete, I consider him more of your slot guy, right? And kind of can work underneath, rack threat, where Michael Pittman Jr. is kind of a nice movable piece and a high volume target player who can win in contested catch situations. But Adonai Mitchell immediately now gives them a vertical presence that can operate on the outside and can separate on the outside too. So there's a lot that Shane Steichen can now do in that offensive passing attack to give his young quarterback, who flashed some really encouraging moments during his brief time as starter in his rookie year in Anthony Richardson. I'm really, maybe I'm a little bit higher on Adonai Mitchell than most. He's, from a fantasy perspective, he's probably not going to get a ton of volume because of Downs and Pittman both there in the passing game. But from what he brings to an NFL offense for Shane Steichen, there's a lot to really be excited about for the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, it's the upside is just unmatched there. And, you know, I was thinking about trios that fit the definition of what I want, right? And the Colts are pretty far up there, too, if they can reach that ceiling, right? Because Michael Pittman, they extended him. I really like his ability to, again, just be that complete boundary presence, right? I don't think he quite has the vertical authority of some other guys, right, but I do think he has enough to stress defenders, right? He's got authority at the catch point. He can run routes. He can separate. Very good utility guy with strong hands over the middle. Has some grading rack too. So just a really complete presence on the boundary that I think you can form the rest of your core around. Josh Downs, for me, you know, coming out of college, was one of my favorite receivers in that class. I comped him to Doug Baldwin a little bit just because, ooh, you know, the explosion, the speed, right? But also the route running I thought was very, very refined for his age. I think the spatial awareness, the ability to use micro movements to capitalize on that, to act on that awareness and capitalize. Those are fun traits. And then at the catch point too, I thought he played a lot bigger than his frame indicated. I think it was a guy who could attack the football. You know, he's got a little bit more play strength than you would expect, right? And I feel like I'm describing Tank Dell, because, you know, especially after what he showed his rookie season, right? But I think Josh Downs, with some more time, can start to emerge more, especially with A-Rich, you know, dishing out deep passes, but also, you know, providing an underneath outlet too. So Josh Downs, really good utility guy with some explosion, in my opinion. And then A.D. Mitchell, you know, kind of fits that separation mold, right? Where if he can, you know, when he's on his game, and there are times in that Texas offense where you could tell they weren't in sync, right? And so whose fault was it, right? I think it was Quinn Ewers. It was a little bit on him. It was a little bit on A.D. Mitchell too, because I think there were some times where A.D. Mitchell, you know, he's so energized as a mover that lends itself to wasted motion at breaks at times, right? You want it to be a little more efficient with that footwork, that plant and drive. But he's one of those guys, when he's on his game and when he's locked in, right? You know, he can put DBs on a string, explosive, flexible, great micro movements, great ability to weave out of stems and use that flexibility and that suddenness to get guys offset and to capitalize with that explosion. So I think, you know, A.D. Mitchell, at his maximum, right, he can be that separator, that defensive coverage carving knife, right? So I really want to see him get to that maximum, because that would be so tantalizing for sure. But and then the vertical speed as well, I think that's another thing in Steichen's offense, right? Steichen loves to stress defenses vertically. Now with A.D. Mitchell, the 4.35 40 yard dash is very appealing. Did he play to that speed all the time at Texas? I don't think, not all the time. I think the bigger concern for me, I do think Xavier Worthy is a little more natural when it comes to tracking the football down the field, right? I think that's the biggest thing. A.D. Mitchell, you know, track football, stay dialed in all through the rep, right? Go at 100%, and then you can be good. But if we're grading these receiving cores by upside, the Colts receiving core is near the top of the list with what A.D. Mitchell can do. And I like him landing in that supporting structure as well. I think you have a young QB who's a good leader. I think you have Chris Ballard. You have Steichen, a lot of offensive veterans as well. I think he has everything he needs to stay on that straight and narrow and become that kind of player. So that's a fun one for me. The one that keeps coming back to mind as well is the Bengals one, just looking at what they have right now. And this is, right, this one might be a flash in the pan kind of thing, because T. Higgins is on the franchise tag. Don't know if he's going to be extended. Probably becomes a free agent in 2025. But for this 2024 season, man, I'm very excited to see what can happen here. Because you look at Jermaine Burton, kind of in a similar mold to A.D. Mitchell. There were some character concern things, whispers before the draft, right? And they're different situations, right? Like Burton is on record. You know, he struck a fan after the Tennessee game in 2022. So there is an incident on record, and, you know, there have been whispers about, you know, maybe some of it's still lingering, but, you know, we have an incomplete picture, so we can't make any definitive judgments on that. But the Bengals got him in round three, and they have Ja'Marr Chase, he's Ja'Marr Chase, enough said, right? They got T. Higgins, and he's T. Higgins, enough said. That duo is one of the best in the NFL, and then you get Jermaine Burton in here, which, you know, I watching his tape, man, it was really tough to kind of articulate what my valuation was, because if I went by my raw grade alone, he would have been in my top 50. He would have been a fringe first rounder, I think. Explosive, got the vertical speed, right? But the bend, the route running, man, I mean, every time, mm-hmm, this guy knows how to stem DBs to get them offset, to use those attack angles to, you know, draw them and cause them to drift over their, you know, sit point, and then just capitalize with that bend and that sink and that angle freedom on his cuts as well. Just surgical. And then at the catch point as well, you know, he's got great hands, sturdy hands, doesn't often drop the football. football. I think the one thing that is maybe not, you know, an elite rack threat, but again, that speed, that explosion, that agility, that always translates well. And I think he has that too. So Jermaine Burton to me is one of the bigger wild cards, because if he stays consistent, if he does what he can do, that Bengals receiving core, I think he provides easily more athletic upside than Tyler Boyd did in that wide receiver three role. I think easily.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, easily. And I think, you know, if he can stay on the straight and narrow, that could be a top five receiving core in the NFL.
What you really wanted to see for me heading into this offseason for the Cincinnati Bengals, you did know that Tyler Boyd, his contract was coming up. You know, the situation with T. Higgins is a little bit uncertain. I felt that they really needed a consistent separator as a third option. Yeah. And somebody who can threaten the defense on the vertical plane, because Jamar Chase and T. Higgins are great vertical options in their own right. They're great boundary receivers that can do it all. But that third option, I thought that you could get an improvement over Tyler Boyd and Andre Yoshivas and Charlie Jones and everybody else that's on that roster. So Jermaine Burton, you hit the nail on the head. Like, as far as upside in this offense with that quarterback, it's very, very exciting. If you plug and play like the same role that we've seen from Tyler Boyd over the last 3 years with Joe Burrow, and you give Burton those type of opportunities to win in the slot or vertically, and you have Joe Burrow throwing him the football, there's a lot of exciting things that could happen. In particular, if they bring back T. Higgins and he manages to play on the franchise tag, or they get a long-term deal done with him, and of course you got Jamar Chase, I think this offense got more explosive with the addition of Jermaine Burton. Yeah, sure, we don't know what to expect when it comes to the character stuff. We don't know that. That's something we don't have access to. But as far as a football fit, I think it's a great football fit.
Yeah, it's one of those where, and we're in the offseason, so we can dream a little bit about what might happen, right? We don't know what's going to, and not every combination pans out, but on the field, right? You know, I'll put it this way, every ability is there. Everything that you need him to be able to do, he can do. There aren't any limitations, like, you know, say with another receiver who might not be strong enough, or might not be fast enough, or might not be nuanced enough as a route runner, or might not have consistent enough hands, right? With Jermaine Burton, every ability that you need is there. You know, just not an elite size threat, maybe not elite contact balance after the catch, but, you know, those are the only things. And I look at receivers who in the modern NFL, you can win as an elite separator and an elite converter. I mean, and a deep threat as well. I mean, you know, having all those three in tandem is a very rare thing. And he has all those things. So the biggest thing will be staying on the straight and narrow. But if you can do that, there's a ton of upside with that receiving core. Any other receiving trios that stand out to you? I know day two, you know, we don't have to be confined to day two either, because I know Miami got an interesting guy in round six. Was the top 100 player for me, Malik Washington from Virginia, going to the Dolphins to join Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. One of the smaller receiving cores in the NFL, but I don't think it matters because they can beat you one-on-one. And Malik Washington is one of those guys who really stood out to me. I would have loved the Vikings to get him. I think he would have been a phenomenal replacement for KJ Osborne. I think he would have been an upgrade, honestly, because you can play him as that pure slot guy, but he can separate, man. He's twitched up, explosive, pretty strong rack threat too. 5'8", 190. So he's got a really burly lower half, and he can use that to drive through contact. And, you know, he's got the twitch, the explosion, enough speed, you know, to stretch teams as well. And then he plays beyond his frame at the catch point too. He's willing to go up and get it and box guys out. So I think, you know, I loved his profile. Would have loved to see him in Minnesota, but Miami is a pretty fun spot too. We talked about complimentary receiving cores. I would have liked Miami to get another bigger guy, right, who can block a little bit, provide that blocking presence for the smaller receivers. But that's a receiver trio that will stress angles and stress coverages, and they will do it consistently. So that was one that stood out to me. Any others kind of at the front of your mind where you're saying, I really want to see how this pans out?
One that really stands out to me, and of course I could go with the 49ers because Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and Ricky Pearsall, but the San Francisco 49ers actually were amongst the lowest in the league as far as passing attempts. They were very productive of offense and efficient, but they ran that offense through Christian McCaffrey. Purdy was excellent. I just don't know if there's going to be enough opportunities in year one for Ricky Pearsall, assuming that no one gets traded, that he's going to have a huge, huge impact. He's a really nice prospect and a really nice player, and he will factor in 11 personnel. I just don't know how impactful that's going to be in that offense this season. Yeah. For me, it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mike Evans was kind of prematurely written off after, you know, even the Buccaneers offense as a whole was kind of written off after Tom Brady retired after the 2022 season. And you had Mike Evans, you had Chris Godwin, who was, well, once upon a time considered one of the best receiver duos in the NFL. You had Jalen McMillan, who I know that he was dinged up in 2023, had a great 2022 though. A lot of formation versatility. Now he's not a burner, but he's got enough speed to be able to give you some pop plays and threaten you on the third level of the football field here and there. And when you combine that with what you have with Mike Evans, and you can slide Chris Godwin into the slot, or you can get creative between moving Godwin outside and having McMillan operate out of the slot, I think this receiver trio got better, because I think that Jalen McMillan is a huge upgrade over Trey Palmer or Devin Tompkins or anybody else that's on the roster for the Buccaneers in the receiver room. And I know that I have the Bucs helmet in the background, so maybe I'm a cockeyed optimist, but I really liked what I saw from Jalen McMillan during his days at Washington. I think there's a lot of route running savvy, very smooth operator, and kind of strong yak threat, I think. A lot of things to like about Jalen McMillan, and kind of flew under the radar during some of this draft process with some of the other big names at the top of the board. But I think the Buccaneers got themselves a really good football player in the third round.
I should have known better than to give Derek an opportunity to drink the Bucs Kool-Aid. I should have known better. No, I'm kidding. No, I'll put your mind at ease. I'm very excited about that trio too. I think Jalen McMillan, if I could look back at my top 300, and if there were, you know, every cycle you want to be retrospective a little bit with your analysis, you want to think back about ways that you could have improved. And I think I look back, if there were a few prospects that I think I could have maybe done one more cross check on their valuation and really scrutinized, like, am I a little too low on this guy? Jalen McMillan would have been one of them, because he was a top 75 guy for me for sure. But maybe I need to be even higher, because again, you mentioned it perfectly. Like, you go back to 2022 when he wasn't dinged up, and even 2021, you know, he produced from a very early age in college, and you could tell that this guy just had it, you know, the separation instincts, the route running nuance and flexibility. You know, I loved his ability to cut stems at really tight angles, really efficient footwork as well. And I do think he has more than enough vertical speed to threaten up seams and on the boundary as well. So, you know, and at the same time, when he is comfortable, right, I think in 2023, because he was banged up a little bit, there were times when he was less comfortable. And I think the drops kind of snowballed a little bit more than they did in previous years. But when he's fully healthy and confident, this is a guy who can be that utility guy that we've talked about, where he can play the slot, he can play the boundary, he can threaten vertically, he can make tough catches, he can generate some rack, anything you need him to do, right? So, you know, I was a big fan of Jalen Polk, but looking back, I think the gap between them on my board might have been a little too big, because I do think Jalen McMillan gives you everything that you need. And, you know, I liked Trey Palmer as that vertical threat, and I think he showed a little bit of that in his first year for Tampa Bay.
He did.
But I think Jalen McMillan is definitely a more complete three-level option for you at wide receiver. And I think not only that, but with the long-term uncertainty with Chris Godwin, he helps you hedge for that suit too. So very big fan of that pick. And I think in the immediate timeline, you're looking at a really fun trio. One more trio, and then I think we can spend the last 5 minutes on running backs. We haven't touched on running backs yet. And maybe tight ends, if you have a tight end fit that you really like. But what do you think about the Ravens trio? They got Tez Walker in round four. And Tez Walker was a pretty polarizing prospect at certain points. He was actually just outside of the top 100 for me. I know some people were a little higher on him, but I was a little bit more concerned with how confined his skill set was. I worry if he can expand beyond being that vertical threat. I know that he's got the hands, the body control. I think the focus drops in the Senior Bowl may have been a little overblown. I do think the hand technique can be a little more consistent in game, but in general, especially working the vertical plane is where he's really comfortable, right? Because he can track the ball, he can contort, he can box out defensive backs, and he can get his body in the right position, right? So I think with Tez Walker, what do you think about that fit? We got Zay Flowers, which we know he can carve up defenses like Santana Moss out there with that speed and that bend and that explosion, right? We know that Rashad Bateman is actually, you know, starting to grow and become a quality player, right? You know, he hasn't produced to an elite level yet, but he can separate. He's got size. He's a solid component. What do you think about Tez Walker and his fit there? Are you a little concerned about how the dimensionality of his fit, or do you think he can expand a little bit?
Well, I like the role that he fits there, which is a, you know, an outside vertical threat. We know he can do that. We, anybody that turns on his tape can see that Tez Walker can run. He can stack people outside. Like I, we talked about his curvilinear acceleration before. I like how he turns and bends the sideline and then kind of veers back in to be able to stack defenders. And he's got nice length. And I there's flashes of nice ball skills and attacking it with his hands. There's some really nice reps in as far as contested catch situations go for Tez Walker, but he's really inconsistent. It feels like he's just an inconsistent guy across the board. The one thing that he can do is you know, win a track meet on the outside. But like you said, hand placement, ability to consistently... I'm not the biggest fan of how he drops his hips consistently when trying to snap down on, because when you have that vertical speed, there's going to be plenty of opportunities to be able to threaten DBs vertically and then snap it down real quick and, you know, become available on hitch routes or, you know, comebacks, or there's some inconsistencies with his technique in snapping down. I also kind of feel like he kind of telegraphs some of his breaks a little bit heading into the break point.
I don't think he has elite hip sync too. That's the other thing for me. Because some guys have the flexibility to make it work and grow within that. But Tez Walker to me is just one of those guys who really struggles to sync his hips, right? You know, it's one of those things where you, and especially when you're pressing upfield with full momentum, right? Like you got to have a lot of control and flexibility to chop back and retract your strides and then swivel 90 degrees on an inbreaker or 180 degrees on a comeback, right? Like you got to be really flexible to pull that off. And I don't know if he has that. So that might restrict how far he can develop with his route tree. So that's the biggest thing for me, honestly.
One of the things that I liked the most about Troy Franklin was that I actually saw some of that, you know, hip flexibility and being able to, you know, drop and sink his hips.
So, you know, it's more of a refinement issue than an ability issue.
Correct. So, and the thing is that refinement, you know, shows up on almost every category of Tez Walker's game, like that, where I have a concern, right? There's some sort of concern. There's even concentration drops that drive me a little bit nuts with him. So I think he fills that need though. I do think that he's a guy that can now, you know, continue to stretch the defense vertically on the outside, working probably in rotation with Nelson Agholor. Rashad Bateman and he's a nice compliment to Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers. I'm intrigued by Tez Walker in Baltimore. I just don't know if I consider it maybe the home run of some of the other trios that were kind of created in the 2024 NFL draft.
For sure. And we can talk about real quick some of the isolated receivers we're not going to talk about, but I want to mention them just to cover every team here. Xavier Legat going to the Panthers, going to be a fun one. Verticality, but he's got strong hands. He can win against press. I'm very intrigued to see, because I do think he's a better prospect than Jonathan Mingo was. I know that parallel has been brought up a lot. I do think he brings more. Keon Coleman to the Bills. So excited to see what he can do there. I know you are of the mind that he probably projects better in a big slot type of role, which I do think early on, while he's refining his skill set as a route runner, that might be the way to go. But there is some overlap there with Dalton Kincaid and what they view him as. So I'm intrigued to see what they do there. I do think the flashes of authority on the boundary are there with Coleman. Can he develop as a route runner and be that number one guy? That will be the biggest thing for him. But the Bills certainly trust him, so we'll see what they do. Ladd McConkey going to the Chargers. That trio is very, very dependent on the availability of Josh Palmer and the development of Quentin Johnson. But Ladd McConkey to the Chargers, and I think we talked about this in the previous podcast too. That's a fun fit. That's a fun fit because he gives you everything that you need with the explosion, the route running nuance, the strong hands of the middle, the utility as a rack threat as well. Everything that we've talked about. He's a very complete option for Justin Herbert. And I think he can be a target funnel right away. Maybe his number one receiver right away. So that'll be a fun one. If you're a fantasy player, I think Ladd McConkey to the Chargers. If he can stay healthy, that's definitely one to keep an eye on. Roman Wilson to the Steelers is another one. And Malachi Corley to the Jets, a couple more on day two. I think Wilson fits really well with what the Steelers like. He's got the speed and agility, route running, but also pretty strong hands. Corley is probably confined to a rack role right away, but I like how he can be isolated within Mike Williams and Garrett Wilson. I think that's a good fit for him. We have around 2 minutes left, Derek. So rapid fire, favorite running back fit and favorite tight end fit in the 2024 NFL draft. What are you thinking?
From a pure fit standpoint, give me Jalen Wright with the Miami Dolphins. Speed. And in Tennessee, he was running into light boxes is a very kind way to put it because of their weird offensive system and how spread out they are. But you give Jalen Wright a runway in particular, you know, they want to get the ball on the outside. I think he is going to give you that element, but I also think he's probably got a little bit more upside as a higher volume ball carrier than Devon Achane. But boy, that is an exciting explosive tandem there in Miami. And then comes a tight end. We mentioned Ben Sinnott. Brock Bowers, maybe not the best fantasy fit from day number one, but I just think that what you're going to be able to do with him is very, very exciting. I actually want to mention Jared Wiley, though, going to the Kansas City Chiefs. I understand that, you know, he's probably not going to have that big of a role over the first 2 years of his career or as long as Travis Kelce decides to play. But Jared Wiley flashed a lot of nice talent. I think he was stuck behind Jatavion Sanders there in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. And then he transferred to TCU and had a couple nice seasons. So I really think he's a smooth mover, a sneaky rack threat, and think he can really develop and hone his game behind the best to ever, one of the best to ever do it anyway, in Travis Kelce.
You stole mine. I was going to go with Jared Wiley. Now I got to think on the fly here. Jared Wiley was going to be mine. I love that fit. Fluid, good route running, but very versatile too. And I think that's always when I look at Andy Reid, you know, I like that versatility because Reid loves to use guys in different ways and move guys across the line. And Wiley fits that to a T. Running back, I am very intrigued to see Jonathan Brooks and what he looks like in Carolina. I know they were talking up Chuba Hubbard in the offseason, but we kind of knew they were going to try and add somebody, and they ended up picking the first running back off the board. So I think they invested a lot in the offensive guard position, getting Robert Hunt, and who I think might have been Damian Lewis. I forgot who they picked aside from him. But they invested a lot in the interior line, so they're going to move people. We'll see if Jonathan Brooks can fit well. He's a slasher with good vision, explosion, contact balance. I really like the idea of him in that offense, giving Bryce Young more of an outlet, something to lean on. So I'm intrigued by that. But Dylan Lobby to the Raiders is a fun one on day three, man. That's when we're rubbing our hands together. We're like, let's see what we can do here, because he can be a slot receiver if you want him to. That's the trio for the Raiders: Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, and Dylan Lobby. That's the there trio. We were on the wrong side of the fence here, but I really like the upside there. I think he has some running utility in addition to the receiving, because he's pretty dense and compact, 5'10", 210, explosive. Your comp for him was James White. I'm going to give you a shout out because I was looking at that, and I think that's a great comp. I think he can be that kind of player for the Patriots. So we'll see if he can. And then tight end, if I wanted to bring up one more, I think the Bengals, they got Eric Aull and Tanner McLaughlin. I think one of those guys emerges and becomes a really solid starter. I think one of them does. No matter which one, I don't know for certain. Aull has some injury issues, so maybe McLaughlin can stay more available, but there is potential there. So it'll be a fun one. That's all we have for you today for offensive playmakers and their fits in the 2024 NFL draft. Just a heads up, next week, again, I will be on vacation, so we will pause the podcast for a week, but we will be back 2 weeks from now on the Tuesday following, and we will be back with 2024 post 2024 NFL draft content, and maybe we'll take a look to 2025 at some point. That's in the books. That's on the docket. But until next time, thank you everyone for listening. Peace out. Have a good one.